Tonight on NBC 10 Boston, opening statements.
I hit him. Karen Reed was framed.
And new testimony.
But what really stood out to me was, you know, the eyes.
They found Johnny in the snow this morning.
Looked like she was giving CPR to him.
2 years ago, a chilling discovery rocked the small town of Canton. Today, a murder trial unfolds on a national scale as a jury and you witness it all.
You alone determine what evidence to believe. You determine the facts of this case.
Canton Confidential, the Karen Reed murder trial, starts right now.
This is a day many have been anticipating for a long time. Thank you for being with us, everyone. I'm JC Monahan.
And I'm Glenn Jones. We're just starting to learn how each side will make its case. We have team coverage for you tonight. Legal analyst Michael Coyne, dean of the Massachusetts School of Law, and our trial analyst Sue O'Connell are here in studio.
Eli Rosenberg will join us from Dedham for Reaction Outside Court. We want to begin with our Kirsten Glavin with today's big headlines. Kirsten.
Well, this highly anticipated murder trial is officially starting to take off. Today, both parties laid out their cases for the very first time to a jury. We also heard from three witnesses who were called to testify. Karen Reed and her defense leaving court confident after wrapping up the first day of testimony in her murder trial.
How was the first day of testimony?
We're pleased with the way the trial's going.
Karen, how was it to see that video? I've
seen it many times. And it's difficult each time.
This police dash camera footage shown to a jury where Reed is seen reacting to John O'Keefe's body found dead in the snow.
When I arrived, I saw Ms. Reed looked like she was giving CPR to him and she had blood on her face.
Canton police officer Stephen Seraph describing what he saw as first on scene.
She kept saying, this is all my fault. This is my fault. I did this. And she was very hysterical. And she kept asking, he's dead. Is he dead? Is he dead?
Paul O'Keefe, the victim's brother, and his wife, Erin, both taking the stand and recounting the moments they first interacted with Reed that February morning.
She said, I don't think I'm ever going to see you guys again. And I said, of course you will. We're friends.
Karen Reed was there. She was being restrained by hospital employees, and she was, screaming out to us, asking if he was alive.
In a straightforward delivery, state prosecutors telling the jury to listen closely to the facts as the trial unfolds.
Is that the only true and just verdict based on that? Is that the defendant, Karen Reed, is guilty of murder in the second degree?
Reiterating in opening statements that John O'Keefe never made it into the house on Fairview Road the night he was killed.
From all of those people within that house that evening, none of them at any point in time is where John O'Keefe come into the house.
Karen Reed's defense team wasting no time alleging a large-scale police cover-up, accusing law enforcement of planting broken taillight evidence.
Karen Reed was framed.
Her attorney raising concerns as to how the investigation was handled.
Lead investigator, Trooper Michael Proctor, right from the start, called Karen Reed names you would reserve only for your worst enemies.
Reed's defense also questioning the credibility of the lead state police investigator, Trooper Michael Proctor.
He told his high school buddies that he was searching her phone for nude photos of Karen Reed.
Now, cross-examination of that police officer who was first on scene is expected to start first thing tomorrow morning. As we have reported in the past, this trial is projected to last somewhere between 6 and 8 weeks long. We're live here in Dedham tonight. I'm Kirsten Glavin, NBC 10 Boston.
All right, Kirsten, now let's take a closer look at those witnesses that Kirsten just mentioned.
We saw three of them today: Paul O'Keefe, John's younger brother, Paul's wife, Erin O'Keefe, and Canton police officer Stephen Seraph. Prosecutors used their line of questioning to depict John as a devoted family man. Paul and Erin spoke about John taking in his niece and nephew. John raised them as his own after his sister lost her battle with cancer and her husband died just a few months later.
We didn't have a, you know, large enough house to take on two other children, so my brother stepped in, moved into the house in Canton and raised them for 8 years.
Paul and Johnny went out to lunch one day, and we had kind of assumed, because Johnny was out on, you know, the streets doing his job like that, that Paul and I would take the kids, and Johnny said he was going to do it.
So again, the start of testimony really did focus on the victim in this case, which is probably proper place to start. Michael and Sue are back with us now. So let's talk about the day we just had. It started with opening statements. And I have to tell you, when I listened to the prosecutor, I was sitting back in my seat and listening methodically. He went through it chronology. But when the defense started speaking, I found myself on the edge of my seat. He was telling a story I really wanted to hear more about. What were your takeaways?
I'm a little bit underwhelmed. I thought the prosecution, as you just pointed out, the defense did, would tell a better story, would use some type of theme that would draw me in to want to hear more. And instead, it was a recitation of all of the witnesses that we're going to hear anyway. And I didn't find it compelling, as we found the defendant. Well, I do worry that the defendant may have assumed a bigger burden than they need to here. I think it's a reasonable doubt case. To now have to, at least in the jury's eyes, prove that they were framed, that the evidence was manufactured, that's a burden that they didn't need to necessarily take on, but now they have, and we'll see if the evidence supports it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I was saying to Michael earlier, I knew all the people who were listed in the prosecution's opening statements, and I knew the evidence, and I was bored out of my mind and got confused a couple of times. And I'm thinking, if I'm confused, how's the jury feel? I mean, you know, the opening statement's supposed to be an outline. It's not a thesis paper and a final paper. It's supposed to be the highlights of what you can expect. And again, with the defense, you walked away understanding exactly what the plan was. Mm-hmm. You had a couple of bombshell moments with the Proctor, the allegations about what Proctor said. And again, you left thinking, okay, prove this to me. I'm open-minded. Prove this to me. And you forgot about what the prosecution said.
What do you think, Michael? You just mentioned they set a bar higher than they needed to.
Yes.
Nothing that these defense attorneys do is by accident. In other words, this wasn't just a slip up. They purposely put that in. And why do you think? Because this, up until now, the whole idea that this has divided people is about the fact that it looks like you can paint either side as being right.
Well, and that is what they intend to do. And the question is, will all of their evidence be able to get in before the jury so that they will consider it? I don't think it's a mistake. I think it's a trial strategy that they've decided to undertake. The problem is, it's the government's burden to prove beyond reasonable doubt all of their charges. I think it's a very difficult burden for the government to prove a second-degree murder here.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Why then would the defense sort of add to their load if really it should be on the prosecution?
Because they think that this is what will result in a not guilty verdict. And time will tell. But the fact is that when you have police misconduct, as it's alleged here, if their evidence will continue to support those allegations, juries and our courts feel very strongly that police misconduct usually will result in a not guilty. Look at the OJ case. Mm-hmm. Look at Casey Anthony.
And remember, they're not just alleging one entity of police misconduct. They might have enough evidence from what the opening statement was to allege misconduct or mistakes or sloppy police work in a number of places, in a number of areas. And if they're successful in doing that, it doesn't have to be a big C conspiracy. It can just be bad police work all around, and that might be enough.
But doesn't this set up a confrontation in the courtroom for when these police officers take the stand?
There's no doubt that's what's going to happen tomorrow morning with the first officer that's cross-examined. That'll give us a big explanation as to how far this is going to go. And the fact is they will attack those witnesses significantly. You'll notice they didn't attack the two family members who testified today. And the prosecution was right to try and humanize the victim in this case, to really show him as a family man, as you said. The problem is they also humanized the defendant in the process by saying that she took care of these kids. She really was, in essence, their mother in the house. And that makes her look pretty good in the jury's eyes.
If you didn't watch, I mean, so far, everything they said, and these are the prosecuting witnesses, that she was lovely, is how they,
right,
like you
had just
said.
The biggest threat in what, you know, there was a kiss that alleged that she got angry about, and they fought for 20 minutes, and I talked to someone today who said, that's all, 20 minutes? And then there was the Dunkin' Donuts issue, where both the brother and the sister-in-law brought up that...
Spoiling the kids,
obviously,
right?
John O'Keefe would get upset about it. That makes sense. We're all parents. We have partners. We know what happens. But, you know, is Dunkin' Donuts enough to make you so angry, and it's such a volatile relationship that, you know, murder could happen?
Well, then what do you think, just based on opening statements, what's the key evidence that you heard today that you went, okay, this might be where we're headed toward in the trial?
The problem with Proctor is, and the problem with law enforcement, there's going to be other incidents of that nature that they'll be able to get into evidence. And I think that's going to ultimately cast the prosecution's fate. The juries do not like government misconduct, and you've got enough of it here that's going to be problematic for the Commonwealth.
It sure does feel like law enforcement is going to be on trial as much as Karen Reed is.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, they definitely are already on trial, and that's what's happening in Canton.
All right. Sue, Michael, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Tiannetti.
If you go by the courthouse in Denham, this is probably what you'll see. It's perhaps the most visible part of this case, what is happening outside the courthouse. Demonstrators, many of whom are Karen Reed supporters, have been making themselves heard and seen in their bright pink outfits.
This case has quickly become one of the most high-profile trials we've had in a long time. So we want to send things out to our Eli Rosenberg, who's at the courthouse in Denham. Eli, talk about the atmosphere today. How was it?
JC, no secret, this is a case and a trial that had really resonated with so many people. Huge interest in what's happening here at the courthouse behind me. So naturally, there was a lot of people today who wanted to get inside. The courtroom just couldn't fit them. So what we found out here was people finding unique ways to hang on every single minute of day one of testimony.
Proctor was not telling the truth. You learn that that was the trial.
Not able to get into the courtroom and determined not to miss a moment. Supporters of Karen Reed huddled around a speaker broadcasting day one of Reed's trial.
This crowd tells me in hope, belief, truth, love, camaraderie, and we're all here to support and find the real killers.
A couple dozen Reed supporters, all wearing varying degrees of pink, in support of Reed gathered. A court-ordered buffer zone around Dedham District Court, keeping them a block away.
I'm streaming NBC 10's coverage of the Karen Reed trial.
Many getting here first thing this morning. Many also taking off work to be here.
Here we go.
Here it is.
This is not the first day I took off. I ran out of time, and then I had to accumulate a little bit more. I have taken off day after day to come here because it's so important to our country.
Everyone out here seemed to have a different reason for being here. This case connecting with many, like few trials do.
That's how you do it.
As awful as the situation is, I've made a lot of friends. We've formed lifelong friendships. It's a really sad situation, but I've met some really great people being out here supporting them.
And as Kirsten reported a little bit earlier in the newscast here, 6 to 8 weeks is what the judge is estimating this trial is going to last. And talking with these people out here, they say they're going to be out here every single day, even if they have to use up more vacation. They say it's just that important. Live in Dedham, Eli Rosenberg, NBC 10 Boston.
Certainly an eventful day, Eli, for people following this case. And there's more. The day is not over yet.
Now coming up, we'll take you to Canton, where tonight town leaders are discussing an audit of the town's police department and its role in the Karen Reed case. We'll be right back. Welcome back. All eyes for the next few weeks will be on the courthouse in Dedham, but what's playing out right now in Canton is just as compelling.
Accusations of corruption in the Karen Reed case sparked an audit of the Canton Police Department, and we've learned that independent audit will begin tonight. These are live images from inside that meeting, which began at 7. Tonight, the audit committee will try to decide the scope of services for hiring independent investigators to conduct the audit. Of course, this all comes on the same day as the Reed trial.
In the eyes of many in Canton, their entire town government is under a cloud of suspicion based on perceptions around the Karen Reed trial. At select board meetings, it's been near chaos. They even shut down public comment.
Kind of like tribal behavior. It's a difficult time for Canton, and we see the solution being transparency, accountability.
Last November, residents turned out in droves to vote, by a narrow margin, for an independent audit of Canton PD. Eroded public trust was seeded almost 2 years earlier, when Canton officers were the first investigators on scene, where the body of Boston police officer John O'Keefe was discovered. Since then, Reed supporters have become convinced law enforcement has something to hide. While Canton officers initially responded to 34 Fairview Road, state police took over soon after. Its lead investigator, Michael Proctor, became the subject of an internal review. Now the entire Canton police force is set to go under the microscope. An independent audit, launching on the very same day Karen Reed goes to trial.
We're back now with our panel, legal analyst Michael Coyne. He's the dean at the Massachusetts School of Law, and our Sue O'Connell. So let's talk about where that piece just left off, Michael. Clearly, the Canton Police Department is under a microscope. There's a lot of people who have doubt in that agency in the town of Canton. But state police don't get absolved either. There seems to be lots of questions there. What questions do you have?
The question really focuses on why were some of the law enforcement personnel in that house that night when they knew that they had close ties to others. And the fact is that the investigation from the outset then was tainted. And that's really problematic. We have a death of a young man who, by all accounts, was a good, decent man. And because of the mistakes that were made by the Canton Police Department and, it appears, the Mass State Police, that he may never find justice. And that's a real tragedy.
Well, and talking about Canton, how divisive this has been, can you talk, Sue, a little bit about how the audit even came about, or the step now to get an investigator for the audit? Because it's kind of collude.
Yeah, I mean, I think every police department should be audited on a regular basis. How about that with an outside investigator? But, you know, there was a vote that the town took and said, yes, by a narrow margin, we want this audit to happen. And tonight they're going to decide the scope of it. I was a resident of Canton for 10 years. I know a few people on the witness list. You know, I don't think that people ever felt they had anything to worry about with their police department, but they never had anything this high profile in recent years happen. So, you know, this is, I think, democracy at work with folks going to the ballot box saying we're concerned about this. Many people I talk to in Canton say, you know, this is not a pro or anti-Karen Reed situation. They had a number of people who ran for the select board this spring, and sometimes people were painting them as a pro-Karen Reed. And they're saying, no, we just want an investigation. There's a cloud over our police department and our town. Let's get in and do a good audit. Let's fix it if we find problems.
That's a nice way to shift the paradigm, saying, you know, just remove any doubt or fog right there with an audit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Transparency cleans all, right?
Yes, it does. Sunshine.
It's Sue, Michael, thank you again. We'll be right back.
NBC 10 Boston is your home for the Karen Reed trial. We are streaming the entirety of the trial on air on our sister station, NECN, as well as online and on our app. Each night at 7 right here on NBC 10 Boston, we'll highlight the day's big moments, bring you in-depth analysis, and deep dive into the case that has gained, as we know, national attention.
Before we wrap up tonight, let's get final thoughts from Sue and Michael as we head into day two of this trial with Sarif on the witness stand first.
I look forward to a strong cross-examination. I don't think it'll be lengthy, but I think it'll be very strong.
And I think we're going to move on. We've said that it snowed. It was a very snowy day. It snowed. We've established that it snowed and there was a blizzard. So I imagine if I was in the juror box, I would like this to move along and not talk about the snow.
To be clear, it's Officer Sarif. He is the first one who arrived on the scene when there was a call in about John O'Keefe being found in the driveway.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thank you both.
Yes.
Thank you.
We'll be seeing a lot of them. That's all the time we have tonight at 7. Thanks for joining us, everyone. I'm JC Monahan.
And I'm Glenn Jones. We leave you with a live picture of the courthouse, the Norfolk Superior Courthouse in Denham. Day 2 tomorrow in the Karen Reed murder trial.